Welcome everyone to the Caribbean Science Fiction Network, a celebration of all things fantasy, folklore, speculative fiction, and of course, science fiction. Today I have with me from Jamaica, Coriandre Lawrence.
You know, I try to use what is around me. You know, my country, my people, my culture, my language, everything, and just fine-tune that into something that I really want to give to this world.
We'll be talking about his debut novel published in 2020, Divine Rights.
I wanted it to have a very classic feel for lovers of the genre. We have to find new ways to bring our stories and our works to relevance and to keep things going and moving forward.
Coriandre, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you. I mean, the debut novel, we're excited. And I hope everyone listening, eventually you get to learn more about this novel as well. So for those who haven't read it, because it's so new, talk to us about Divine Rights, as well as the idea behind it.
You know, after working in journalism for more than a decade, I was inspired not only write a novel, but to do a body of work that reflects some truth about the ills of our society, and you know, possibly open the eyes and hearts to you know, removing the veil oftentimes cast over our eyes. So, Divine Rights is not so much about the future, but a look at a thousand lifetimes into where we might be heading, and you know, some oftentimes that reveals exactly where we are.
Just, you know, every writer, I would say, well, I feel that writers bring their own unique things to their style of writing, and I believe that for science fiction as well. So if you were to talk to someone about what your science fiction, what is your kind of science fiction style, how would you describe that?
It's a mixture of dystopian and cyberpunk elements blended with space science fiction. So that's how I describe my type of science fiction based on, you know, growing up, and I was really into comics as a youngster, and you know, growing up watching cartoons, and oftentimes the cartoons that we watch in the evening after school is science fiction. I was really drawn to the cartoons or the comics that really spoke to social issues and spoke to essentially the humanity, and really cartoons and those types of production that really try to have you see the more moral and ethical side of the story, as opposed to, you know, you're seeing the action and you see the characters doing all these crazy things, but a lot of times it's a story behind those battles that really intrigued me growing up. When we think about X-Men, the story of X-Men, really, when you think about it, two of the main characters, Professor X and Magneto, they were really just mirrored from real society, as in Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. And they were just mirrors of our inspirations for those characters, really. And so for my own self, I take inspiration from that, looking at characters are elements within the real world that I can fuse into my writing and different characters.
Yeah. You mentioned the so we have the cartoon, that cartoon influence, and I want to go back to the journalism side of things. What was that like for you? You know, experimenting with science fiction, but being a writer in general.
When I was young, I was into comics, cartoons. I read a lot of Greek mythology. And then, you know, some of the old stories that my grandmother used to tell me about Anansi. And, you know, that's more on the fantasy side of things. But how it all came together, I believe, when I was about 14 or 15 years old. And coming from the Caribbean, you know, everybody goes to extra lessons, separate and apart from school, right? And on the weekend, I used to go to what was called a reading club. I'm from Spanish Town, Jamaica. And shout out to Tempo. That's the classes I went to as a child. And that's where my love for reading, science fiction, fantasy, just novels and reading on a whole. That's where it was nurtured. And then I think maybe going into maybe fourth form in high school, I went to St. Catherine High. Shout out to all the St. Catherine High students as well, past students and the school itself. And it was at that point in time I started to think seriously where I wanted to go with my life as it relates to a career. And, you know, a couple of things I did well at the time, which was basketball and writing. And I leaned more to the writing. And, you know, so it was at that point in time I structured my life into, I was thinking, okay, I want to be a writer. I want to write. That's what I love. I love reading. I like research. What career path that can this lead me to? And then, you know, after some research and just the moon and the stars aligning, essentially, it led me to journalism. And then after high school, I went to Northern Caribbean University where I studied mass communication. When I left university, I worked at the Gleaner company for some time. Did other companies still in the same field, essentially. Went over into tech for some time as well. And then I went to Centennial College in Canada, where I did an advanced diploma in print journalism. And then, you know, I delved even deeper in that side of the world as it relates to politics and hard news and feature writing and, you know, just a whole, you know, I wrote for Zuma magazine that's in Toronto. And just my love for writing was just a continuous process and, you know, slowly blossomed. And, you know, writing, being a journalist I wouldn't say it's the most profitable of profession, you know, but I think it's a responsibility that we have to society because it's journalism is essentially the pulse of your society. You know, it speaks to the truth. It holds various members of your society accountable. And, you know, one thing that I've learned is, you know, you don't have to be afraid to speak the truth, because the truth will defend itself. You know, oftentimes they compare truth to a lion. You don't have to defend a lion. A lion can defend itself. So
yeah, you said journalism isn't the most profitable, and you're also a writer, so you're like two for two,
right? Yeah, the audiobook for Divine Rights will be coming out soon, probably in another month or so. I haven't tied down the date exactly, but definitely this summer my audiobook will be out. And the production behind it, I have to shout out Great Ones Production, where it's not just the narration, it's a full body of work where the sound effects, the sound design. I've a creative here in Jamaica by the name of Just Ward and El Fuego. They're actually handling the sound design, so the listener can be fully immersed within the story. So, you know, as writers, we have to find new ways to bring our stories and our works to relevance and to keep things going and moving forward.
As you talk about the politics and the writing, I could see everything coming together because and you talked about being, you know, being interested in Greek mythology, and you know, I wanted to ask you about this because in the novel there's one of the characters named Troy, and that has an immediate association with Greek history. So we have a novel set in Jamaica in 2160, but there's a character called Troy. So what was the setup for this? Why have a character named in this way for something set in Jamaica?
A lot of times when you embark on a journey, oftentimes you don't know how things are going to, how you're going to actually achieve it. So, you know, you worry about the hows a lot of times. And then, you know, I find that once you remain on your purpose and you remain focused step by step, you know, everything will come together. And as it relates to Troy, I don't know why the name, when I was writing the novel, I didn't come up with the name of the main character. You know, I knew what he was supposed to say, to think, how he was related to the story and everything, but I just didn't have the name. And then it came to me that Troy is one of the most popular names in Jamaica, right? And easily attuned, you know, for those who love to, especially my Jamaican readers out there. And, you know, I thought to myself, this name would tune in, you know, and be very relatable to them. And I'm sure across other Caribbean countries, the name Troy, someone has a brethren by the name of Troy, right? But separate and apart from that, I always do work that has layers to it, and layers to it for the reader to explore. And like, as you know, the tale of the Trojans and the Greeks speaks to deception and receiving gifts in the guise of, you know, merely wanting to destroy and pillage. You know, I thought it would make for for interesting depth and feel as well, just having that side to it as well, which, as I said, just came, you know, moon and stars aligned, and I, you know, I said to myself, wow, the story of Troy and the Greeks and how that panned out can somehow be reflected or juxtaposed to the character himself, you know, because what he represents and what he's trying to protect in as it relates to his country and where he's from and his people, you know, I thought that would be an interesting dichotomy.
What also happens in the novel, some things change, some things remain the same. And one of the things that remains the same was this emphasis on the tourism industry, which has evolved in the novel, right? So why was mentioning tourism, I was exploring this, you know, why was it important to you then to do this in a novel about 2160? What can we take away from this? That has become, you know, these new heights it was referenced.
Yeah, okay, as it relates to tourism and all of that. I believe many times the Caribbean is structured for pleasure for foreigners, you know, but not the locals whose generation date back to, you know, a history of struggle. There is so much value than tourism, you know. I'm not negating it because, you know, a lot of Caribbean nations have been, especially during the 60s and 70s, were built up on tourism. But the people of our nation carry the value. You know, the system only really exploits for the benefit of, you know, major corporations. And, you know, if you go and check how many of these big hotels equate to locals owning them, you know, or are being able to gain generational wealth from them, you know. So that's one aspect to it that really stood out to me when I was writing and wanted to center. I wanted to highlight economy.
Yeah.
You know, but I really wanted to speak to something specific that, you know, we all the islands in the Caribbean can relate to. You know, we need real industry for our people. You know, there are thousands of artists, writers, engineers, farmers that can expand beyond tourism into trade and industry. And, you know, but oftentimes that, you know, to say it plainly, you know, oftentimes that means growth for the lower class, which in and of itself is a whole other battle.
And something that is also centered, as you say, in addition to tourism, is the political system, right? So now it's not unknown that in science fiction, political systems are painted in this very very corrupt light. And in this novel, we see a similar thing, but it seems because there's reference to the League, right? So talk about the League in relation to politics as you were trying to explore it.
So let me just say the League actually fits the science fiction narrative that I wanted it to, you know? And so it's interesting you say that, but I wanted it to have a very classic feel for lovers of the genre. Very, you know, they can, you know, catch on to it and feel the sinister that's coming from, because, you know, it's, I also classify my novel as a political fiction, right? So I wanted it to have that feel. But I'll say this, the famous psychologist C.G. Jung once said, where love rules, there is no will to power. And where there is power, or a predominance of power, love is lacking. So the League tries to offer solutions and gifts of an idealized way of living to the society. But really and truly, it's all a guise to engage you in a system of control. And, you know, when readers, I try to paint a world that, you know, as you're reading, the paintbrush is just going, just continuously going in your mind as you're reading. And the League offers the people of Jamaica a way out, right? But, you know, sometimes what you consider free isn't necessarily for your own benefit or for your own growth. And this is an aspect that is so popular, and we've seen so many times in politics throughout Jamaican history, where, you know, they give you the chicken and rice to come out and and vote, you know, but all the things that are supposed to be done once you get the vote, you know, it's not done. But the League now, they are an outside entity. They come from another country. And now they're coming into this country, say, oh, okay, this is what we're going to give you. This is what we're going to offer. And, you know, the people, you know, they're already being under pressure, thinking that this is going to be a savior for them. But really and truly, it's just it's just re-mechanized and improved upon manipulation. Which is which and as you get into the novel, a lot of technology is used. I don't want to give away everything, but as you get into the novel, you realize that a lot of technology is used in that manipulation as well. And that's something I wanted to also speak to our current times, where, you know, it's an age of social media. It's the age where, you know, everything is at the tip of, it's just a reach away, right? But oftentimes we lose ourselves in this because it becomes something that isn't real, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted to speak and explore those elements. And as I said, once the reader continues and goes through the depth of the novel, I think they'll find so much information that speaks to not only your soul, but to your current times, and you having accountability in regards to recognizing it and not just, you know, having the times pass by and not being involved.
It does seem that it's thoughtful, you know, the way that you construct it. So I'm just like curious, like any kind of influences you felt yourself almost unconsciously playing on when you were creating not just the league but the novel in general, like any particular influences?
I think there are various aspects of the novel that are in my writing on a whole. I get inspiration from, and you see shades of that within this novel. I'd say I'm a big fan of George Orwell. So his dystopian take and dark take on the world, or the world he creates, was definitely an inspiration. Also, Mario Puzo, who wrote The Godfather, I admire his prose and just how he tends to, you know, there can be several stories layered within the same story, but it just moves so smoothly as you read along that, you know, you almost become a part of the family once you're reading the novel. And and then I'd say Ernest Hemingway, his prose, especially The Old Man and the Sea, you know, very, very introspective way of writing when the character is thinking and reminiscing. And as I said, the prose. So those three writers really, really throughout my own, you know, being a lover of reading and so forth, I think those writers really spoke to me. Marcus Garvey as well is a big inspiration. Yes, he's known more for the Pan-Africanism and, you know, the politics of that, but his writings also played a big role in my life.
So in terms of the finished product, what were you most satisfied with in terms of how the novel turned out?
I would say I'm happy about the world I created and the characters in it. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope it can go down in history and remain in the minds and the hearts of, you know, of everybody who reads my book, all my fans and all of that, because, you know, I try to do something that's never done before. Mm-hmm. You know, we get inspiration from different people and different works and such, but, you know, I try to use what is around me, you know, my country, my people, my culture, my language, everything, and just fine-tune that into something that I really want to give to this world, for it to do its own work. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're here for a purpose,
mm-hmm.
and we're here to help each other and to help grow and to make this world so much better than you know, as best as we can, really. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my inspiration and what I'm proud of in accomplishing this novel is, you know, opening as much eyes as I possibly can to not only the ills in their own society, but even your own self journey and your own inner awakening to understanding your truth and, you know, holding yourself accountable. And, you know, that's really what, you know, makes me proud about this novel. I'm here smiling as we're talking about it too. And the cover.
Yeah.
And the cover.
Yeah.
Shout out to Leighton Estick. He did the, you know, he really put on the cover what I had in my mind. I told him this, I gave him the story, I explained, you know, the look and everything, and he was able to sketch exactly what I had in my mind.
Yeah.
Too. So yeah, I'm proud of the cover as well.
You know, let me just say the way that the political aspect of it is so central. I really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, I go back to what I just said. Sometimes the politics is sort of like the side story kind of thing, but I really liked how in this novel you sort of worked it into everything.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
So in terms of, you know, I see that you're kind of setting your style now, but in terms of the Caribbean science fiction as a whole, you know, I really want to get your opinion on what it is right now and where you want to see it, because it is doing big things. And now that you're a part of that, how do you want it to evolve, and what kind of things do you want it to take on?
I'm hoping to see, you know, film. That's mm-hmm. that's one aspect that I feel very strongly about now. I look forward to doing my own film, you know, setting up my own world. And the Caribbean is eclectic, it's colorful, it's cultured,
mm-hmm.
and it's filled with stories for all the subgenres of science fiction. And, you know, I really believe that the Caribbean is filled with talent, excellent writers, writers for screenplays, mm-hmm. directors, storyboard creators, and so forth. And I really just want to see us be able to expand that much more, I hope that my own novel, Divine Rights, can find its way into schools. And, you know, kids are, you know, we grew up doing Othello, that type of stuff. But, you know, I really want to see now our own work as Caribbean writers. Because, as you said earlier, it's so appreciated abroad, you know. There's the Caribbean Book Festival in Brooklyn, I think. And there's so much things going on as it relates to Caribbean writers and the stories and the folklore and all of that. And I just want to see it expand so much more. I have two, outside of my audio book, I have one more thing that's coming up, which it's in the area of film. Let me say that much.
Okay.
And it's something I'm exploring where, you know, where now. It's film. It's film, but it's anime. So
yeah,
that's one aspect that, you know, will be coming out soon. But as I said, I'll have the audiobook first, and then we can get into that aspect of things. But yeah.
time has flown by. I don't know where the time gone, but you know, I always ask writers to leave listeners with something. So anything you want to talk about that we might not have covered, anything you want to mention about the book or anything in general?
I just want to tell, you know, all your listeners, you know, support Caribbean writers, support our work, you know, go out, get Divine Rights. It's available on all platforms. And, you know, leave your reviews. Let me know what you think. And yeah, just continue for the love of it. And you know, the greatest form, this is something I use for my own as a narrative for my own work or thesis. Unity is the best form of intelligence, you know. And we're living in an age now where we're more connected than ever before, but oftentimes we're so disconnected in the deeper things to life, you know. So this novel speaks to, you know, on the surface it talks about politics and it talks about different ills and all of that, but it's really a cry for unity as well. So
when you said you were a journalist, you didn't tell me you were a philosopher as well. But I like that. I like in unity there's a problem. So, Corey Andre, I want to thank you so much for doing this.
You're definitely welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
And to everyone listening, continue to stay tuned to the Caribbean Science Fiction Network. Bye.